Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by Kyle Devitt, our MLL source, font of knowledge, as it were, maybe some sort of show gun. How do you feel about that? MLL show gun.
I like that. I like that. I still like People's Champ, though. I'm going to go with it. It's all good.
All right, well, we'll be bringing the People's Elbow to you later on as we force feed and, I guess, inject into your brain via brute muscle all sorts of MLL opinion-based knowledge. However, first, Kyle, we are going to discuss a little bit about last week. We're changing the format of the podcast a little bit. There, with the NCAA championships and the Inside Lacrosse descendants on Boston impending, the MLL has suspended operations and will not be playing games this weekend. There is no coach's call to provide you with all of the juicy tidbits and news. So we're not going to go ahead and bring on a guest because, like I said, we've got the format change. We wanted to be a little bit lazy this week, but we will bring you a guest next week, I promise. Let's first do touch, however, on last weekend's games. I actually got a chance to see a few of them, saw a few finishes, didn't really see anything that I would say was in contention, and also I can't watch things that aren't in HD anymore, at least sports that aren't in HD. I just can't do it, so I turned on Denver-Boston but wasn't able to stick with it. I know that you have gone the complete other way, and you've watched many games, or all games, multiple times. You've watched all games and some of them multiple times. What was your big takeaway of the weekend, outside of the fact that MLL games at 11 o'clock, 11 a.m. on a Friday are pretty awesome?
That was pretty awesome. I didn't mind it. I tried to watch it live. I couldn't get it done. I had work to do, but I got to see it that afternoon, and it was fun to watch. It was definitely strange to see the players kind of like the first quarter of that game is kind of like, oh, what are we doing out here? It's so early. What's going on? You know, but I think they had an okay crowd there, kind of like what we talked about last week. And, you know, it wasn't a terrible game until the Bayhawks really opened it up, second, third quarter. And, you know, Michael Kimmel went off as he is able to do, when given space and is hands free. And, the funny thing about that game and his output in that game is after the end of the game, they did the post game interview. And he said, you know, he gave credit to like his stick. He's like, well, I had, have one of my buddy's brothers string me up a new stick and, you know, just like thank my teammates and stuff like that. And I thought that was pretty funny. I like that. I think it's great when players are like, yeah, I have a new stick. It was definitely the stick. I always think that's good.
It is. Yeah, it is an underrated thing. I actually was, what was that? One of the NCAA things that I heard recently or read recently, it was either a comment on a website or something on a message board, and I apologize for not providing better attribution, but I love this idea. So since Denver practices at altitude, there's almost no humidity in Denver, then when they travel, their pockets are like really susceptible to change just because of the normal like additional humidity that you see on the East Coast. And somebody posited that since they play so many games on the East Coast, they should keep all of their sticks on. They should keep like an extra stick for every player, like in the region, and then just drive it to their games, which I think is absurd, but like an awesomely absurd idea. But I do want to make my comment about what happens when you play games for kids at 11 a.m. in Hamilton, Ontario, that I didn't really expect until, and didn't really occur to me until I saw the replay, and that is you get a lot of Canadian housewife mothers in the crowd. It was awesome. They were like so clearly the same moms that you hear in that you hear in YouTube videos of like junior A fights that you can't see, like yelling at the refs, like "Come on, ref!" Well, I can't do a Canadian accent, so I'm not even going to try. But it was awesome, and I hope they enjoyed it. I hope that they, you know, that becomes an annual tradition for the Nationals.
That is excellent that you pointed that out, and I kind of noticed it, but I didn't really make a note of it. But you know, I mean, I like. The thing is, like, the Nationals, man, everyone can point to all these box players not being there, and the NLL is over now. Congratulations to the Rochester Nighthawks on the MLL podcast. You're welcome. It's done. These guys should be back. Really, does the Nationals season start at them 0-3 and like, oh, let's all play now? You know, it's what do they do now? Like, they're 0-3, you're in a hole, and you gotta dig, and hopefully they have enough guys to come out. But I think that the one weakness that we saw in that game that I don't think they're getting back is, you know, dynamic, athletic, running midfielders. So you're going to have to pick a couple of those up. Kyle Matis is not the only guy that can do that for you. You know, you need some other guys to come onto the roster to give you some juice, in the open field. And against the Bayhawks, can make anyone look silly, but they made Hamilton look decidedly less serious than they should have.
Well, I mean, is this a little bit maybe what we saw? Hold on, I'm just looking at their 2009 title defense right now. Let's see. So they were 2-2. Wow, people are 3-1. 4-1. Wow. Yeah, never mind. Totally off base. I was gonna say that they like had a big like end of season run. They finished the regular season 7-5, and they ended up winning the ML championship. And yeah, I mean, you know, they just kind of had a mid season swoon. They were 2-2, and they finished with 5 losses. I think that, you know, 3 of them came in a row. Yeah, they did. They lost June 20th, June 25th, June 27th. Oh my God, they played 3 games in a week? That's crazy. That was not a good stretch. Oh, you know what? No, that wasn't it. I was thinking that might have been when they were over there for England, but that wasn't it either. So anyway, yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I think that they are going to have to recover. What do you mean? Is this what they're going to have to do? They're going to have to start an 0-3 hole. Well, clearly that's what they're going to have to do.
Right. Well, I mean, I just mean the mentality of digging out and that they're not alone now, you know? Yeah. There's other teams that have to do that.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you. But, I mean, as these rookie rules, or not rookie rules, but this rookie availability issue comes to the forefront, I feel like it's kind of minimizing the NLL returning players a little bit, because it's making that we don't know what our roster is going to be at the end of the season, at the beginning of the season phenomenon, not exclusive to teams that carry a lot of NLL players. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, it's also the NCAA interfering too. Like, people keep talking about the NLL thing. Like, how many of these rookies would be game changers for teams? Mark Matthews and Steele Stanwyck are game changers. You know, Rob Pedel is a game changer. The top 3 picks aren't playing. Or top 4 picks, sorry. Cause, I mean, well, actually, Manley's not playing either. So, the top 4 guys aren't even in the league yet.
Well, that's not the NCAA's fault.
No, it's not. That's not what I meant to imply. I meant it to go the other way. It was thinly veiled criticism of the league, possibly too veiled. But you know, the MLL is as much to blame for this problem as people keep blaming the NLL. Everybody's at fault here, and it's like, it's a blame game that I'm just not interested in playing. It's just, it's making the quality of the play suffer. And no one wins when the quality of the play is like, the only good game of the weekend should have been Denver-Boston, and Denver had a bunch of guys injured, and it barely was a contest. You know, it's stuff like that that really, like, and that doesn't really have a lot to do with the NLL thing, but it has a lot to do with it at the same time, because Boston had all their guys. You know?
They didn't have one guy that we will get to in a minute. But yeah, I mean, your point is well taken in terms of the most important factor is the quality of play on the field. But also, I mean, you know, by starting 2 extra weeks earlier, you know, it's 2 extra weeks where people aren't, at least lacrosse fans, aren't going to be paying their full attention to the league.
Right.
And that's, I mean, whether or not that's more or less significant, probably difficult to argue one way or the other, than the actual games not being that good. Maybe it's better that people aren't paying attention until the games get really good, and that's kind of what, you know, that's kind of what I'm feeling.
That happens in a lot of sports. I feel like people are just like, oh yeah, I only watch the NHL when the playoffs come on, or I only watch the NBA when the playoffs come on. Like, that happens. I mean, if you do that with the MLL, you only have a weekend to enjoy the action, as opposed to a protracted month and a half, two months.
2 months, yeah, exactly. A quarter of the season, basically.
Yeah, so, I mean, you gotta look at it like that. But, you know, did you get to see any of Denver-Boston? You just saw part of it because it wasn't in HD?
Yeah, pretty much. Just kind of turned it off and then, or I'm sorry, turned it on and then more or less turned it off. But yeah, it was, you know, I was following you on Twitter because that was in high definition. And I mean, I don't know. You know, I thought your points about Mundorf were interesting, in terms of his ability to play well. I think that the thing that I take away from that a little bit is that my sense is that, so Boston's, Boston's defense probably is most notable in its strength for its ability to, like, you know, they're just so good with their sticks, and you've made that point multiple times, and I agree with you on it. But I also think that they probably play, true or false, better team defense, better support than any other team in the league.
I think that, you know, I think Chesapeake has the talent, has the personnel now, not even the talent, just the personnel to play as well as the Cannons do around the cage. I think the Cannons play really well around the cage. I think they play like crap behind the cage, to be honest with you. I think every time they go behind cage to guard someone, or they get hung up a lot, at the top of GLE or in top of the crease, with guys behind. But the thing that they do really well is packing in the middle and sliding quickly when that guy in the back at X gets beat. I think they are probably the best at that. I'll definitely give them that. And that is team defense. So yeah, I agree with your point with like a minor caveat.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess I haven't totally finished my point. My point is that Boston is probably, even though, you know, I think that at this level, individual matchups, the ability to shut down one player is dictated most by how good a certain guy is at playing a certain guy. So, like, for instance, Brett Hughes acquired this reputation, probably rightfully, that he was good at stopping John Grant Jr. Well, Brett Hughes wasn't necessarily the best shutdown defenseman in the league at any point throughout his career. I mean, he certainly could have been in that conversation, but the part of the reason he was in that conversation was because of his ability to limit Grant's effectiveness, you know, when they were kind of both at their peak. So my point is that, you know, you might be able to find a guy who's just always been good at shutting down one particular player for whatever reason. But ultimately, when it comes to limiting an opponent's best player, I'm going to go with the team that does that efficiently, effectively, repeatedly, and consistently. And I think that Boston is probably capable of doing that. So when you look at Denver, a team who our criticism of them in the preseason was that they were going to probably have to rely a little bit too much on Mundorf, and then his ability to put up four against them, I think that that's worth something. You know what I mean? I think that's a pretty good day for him in a loss.
Oh, yeah. No, I wasn't saying that, and I'm sure it came across like this in a couple of tweets, because they're all tongue-in-cheek, because that's pretty much all I do with my tweets on Twitter is tongue-in-cheek stuff. But really, like you're saying, styles make fights when it comes to matchups, right? So that's kind of what you're saying with individual matchups. But with team matchups, it's all about – what can everyone else help to do to limit a guy? And I would agree that that's definitely something that Boston is good at. Like I said multiple times, I mean, we both talk about Mitch Belisle as an elite defender. And it, to me, was surprising that Mundorf was beating him as regularly as he did. And I actually thought Mundorf had more than two goals. And it turns out he just had two goals and two assists.
Yeah, following you on Twitter, I thought he had more than two goals too. And actually, just before you before you continue on real quick, I think that the reason that you can rely on, I think team defenses provide for fewer aberrations. Analyzing the quality of a team defense provides for more protection against overemphasizing aberrations. Whereas when you look at an individual, you might find aberrations being more impactful in your data set.
Right.
Nerd talk.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying. It's just, you know, when you put in, so you're saying like putting in a star against, you know, for lack of a better term, a machine, like putting a individual talent against a machine talent, a manufactured talent of a group of people. The group of people is usually going to get the result if they're organized enough.
More consistently.
Right. More consistently. Absolutely. I mean, I think you saw that in Boston's midfield holding the previous scoring leader going into the weekend, Jeremy Sievers, to a goose egg. You know, I think that was, more impressive than, you know, Mundorf still got a couple points, but I feel like Mundorf could have had a lot more points. That was kind of the point I was trying to make, just because of his individual ability to get past the first level. But he was met with the second level, and Boston is very good at having the two on the backside, and something they'll do is that they'll bring a guy from up top all the way down. And even if it's midi, they don't really care. And a lot of times that pass is closed off because they do that, and it's very effective, and it causes turnovers and it keys their transition. They're very good at it. You know, that's definitely one of the biggest factors in the game that I saw. That and, you know, Paul Rabil being Paul Rabil and, you know, Kevin Buchanan being Kevin Buchanan. Just guys that go, can't be stopped, and still get looks and still, you know, get to cash their checks. You know, and that's what they did. They just cashed checks and cashed G's all day.
How much did possession have to do with the outcome of this game and the fact that Chris Tucker was able to win 18 of 30 faceoffs?
Well, it wasn't that dominant until kind of like the second half when he pulled away. It took him a little while to figure out Robarge. But, you know, once he did, you kind of got the sense, like before he took over, kind of like halfway through the third quarter, just winning over and over and over, you got the sense that Denver wasn't out of the game because Denver is Denver, and Denver has the ability to score. They have a big-time superstar in Mundorf, and they have guys that Phil seems very well, and Josh Sims has been playing very well. So you didn't really think that they were out of it until that started happening. I would say he closed it for him very, very effectively. I would say that the closing was exceptional on his part.
All right, good. Now we got to move quickly through the next couple games of the weekend. Do you want to go to Ohio's first win or the Lizards' narrow victory over the Hounds?
Oh, let's go with Ohio. Let's give Ohio some dap. Good job, Ohio.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Good job, Ohio.
I will play the role of Ohio, Terry, in this production.
Oh, that's right. You are from Ohio. I get it. Awesome. No, they did well. It's you know, kind of like what I wrote in the column. They win when you are sloppy, they are at their best. You know, it's not that, and people probably thought I was trying to make the analogy that people play down to Ohio or something. That's not what I mean. They make you make mistakes. That's what they're good at. They're not one of the best teams in the flat sets, the 6-on-6 defense or 6-on-6 offense. They're not particularly adept at that. But what they are really good at is running the break, taking advantage of lazy attackmen that don't ride, and popping the ball up the field, beating you to the middle of the field, and getting and manufacturing breaks. I mean, they manufacture breaks. They sprint to every loose ball on the sideline. They pick it up. They look at the ref and they throw a pass. And there's a guy wide open running in from the box. You know, it's they did a very good job of that against Rochester. And I think Rochester, you know, to borrow a soccer analogy, they have the Claudio Ranieri of MLL personnel deciding who gets plugged in every day. The Tinker Man. They're getting tinkered with too much. There's too much turnover in the players for Rochester to have built on that win against Chesapeake last week. And that's really what cost them, I think, in the game. But that's not to take away from Ohio, because Ohio made Rochester play their game and they won because of it. They did a great job.
Yeah, I didn't watch enough of this. I didn't realize that I had access to the video until the game was already out of reach, but I still watched it because I like a lot of the guys on both of these teams and I like watching them play, and I was also really interested to see what the crowd was like. So bravo to John Algy, all those involved in the machine, for not only getting this thing off the ground, but having a really successful first outing. You know, announced attendance was over 6,000. Gotta like that. But ultimately, I think, you know, the fact that they were able to treat the home fans to a W early on was probably as or more significant than anything else that that occurred that day. So congratulations to the Ohio machine, who are no longer maidens.
That's right. Good dub.
There you go. So, yeah, on to a 10-9 W for the Long Island Lizards. Matt Gibson, 1-4, right?
Yeah, he did a great job. I was really impressed. He had a great game, regardless of anybody else. But I think that, you know, that's the one that jumps out at you because he's the rookie. But, I mean, Ryan Young was all over the place. That's the Ryan Young that I remember from last year, not the one from the year the couple games that he's played so far. That was the Ryan Young that showed up at the end of last year, just wants the ball, you know, moving off ball, looking for that feed, looking for that catch and finish, easy G, and he did a great job of it in this game, you know, and he was one of the difference makers. Brian Langtree being subbed in for Grant Catalino mysteriously, after Catalino scored his first goal, was very strange to me because Langtree just played attack the rest of the time. and then got subbed out again at the start of the second half. And it was, and then got subbed back in. It was very strange. I mean, they kind of just are saving Catelino for man up or whatever set they're doing, cause they're just dodging in and out from the back and the wing and trying to open it up. And I guess they didn't think that Catelino fit in with that, the matchup, with the Hounds very well, but you know, he still got a goal and still, you know, made a good play in the game. It's just Langtree was so dynamic with the ball. It's like they have to play him somewhere, you know? So, and you know, the other story about that game for Long Island is, you know, Stephen Pirzer's woes continue. And it's just, you know, he was one of the best players, one of the breakout guys in the last couple of years, and he just hasn't gotten it together for whatever reason so far. And you know, I hope he does better in the next game.
I find it pretty impressive or interesting that there's already that firm of a scouting report on the Hounds that you want to attack them in such a specific way that it really changes your personnel decisions. Which, you know, maybe you're not totally right on there. Who knows? But ultimately, yeah, definitely an interesting go for the Lizards. But what do you think each team takes away? I mean, you know, when you look at the fact that this win leads into a 2-week break, and certainly there's, you know, I guess a little bit left on the shelf there. What are your thoughts on kind of the direction that all eight franchises are headed?
Well, I feel like if you're talking about Long Island, you have to build on that effort and figure out that, I mean, one of the things that Spallina said on the call week after week is our attack is not producing. Well, your attack got you 9 goals out of 10 in this game. So your attack finally produced and then your midfield didn't. So you kind of got to find a nice balance there, and you got to go with that going forward. I think as far as Charlotte's concerned at the end of that game, Charlotte had 3 clean looks, one of which was saved off of Drew Adams, the middle of his stick, the right off the shaft from Billy Bitter, bouncer that he saved. That was a pretty good bid. And you know, Drew Adams is huge. You got to build around a goalie like that. I think one of the things the Hounds have going for them is they have Kevin Randall coming in from Notre Dame, after this weekend, hopefully, depending on, if he is going to play or not. But he would be great for them. He would be another guy like Flanagan and Sanoski down low that can shut guys off, and then they can shift some other personnel around and get some more stoppers up top and not just rely on having to get good matchups and trying to shut down one guy with Flanagan and then not having, you know, maybe having a short stick on attack like they've done a couple times mistakenly, with bad switches. But, you know, we'll see what they do going forward. But, you know, as for the rest of the teams, like, they really just need to figure out their best lineup. And that doesn't come, just with games. That hopefully these teams get a chance to practice this weekend. I would guess not, since so many coaches are involved with some NCAA stuff, so many GMs and stuff, but, you know, I would hope they get an extra practice in this weekend and, you know, hopefully get a look at a couple of the guys like, you know, Matthews or Stanwyck gets to go check in with their teams and see if they're worthy of some time. Obviously, I think they are. They wouldn't have been picked so high if they weren't, and they are some of the best players in the country. So hopefully we get to see those guys, you know, in week 5, after this weekend. And it's a nice little break, a nice little bye week for all the teams to re-energize and get ready for, you know, the second, third of the season. Like, there's like 2/3 of the season left, something like that, like 3/4 of the season left.
You're really good at the division there, Kyle. No question about it.
I'm not good at it. Math, Terry. I have an English degree. Okay? Come on. Well, you want this in amateur? We'll do that.
So the thing, the interesting thing about this is, you know, 8 teams, 4 make the playoffs. Before the season started, Paul Rabel mentioned to me, name drop, that he thought that it was really significant. Head-to-head matchups were going to be significant because he thought the 4th place spot was probably going to end up being a tie, and that tiebreakers were going to shake it out. When you look at it right now, you've got Boston, Chesapeake, Denver, 4-0, 3-1, 3-1, respectively. Not a huge surprise there. 3 playoff spots, you know, if the season were to end today, which is absurd to think about, that would be, you know, they would be firmly in. And then you've got Ohio, Long Island, Rochester all 1-2, Charlotte 1-3, Hamilton 0-3. Huge grouping, you know, big delineation being drawn right there. And basically what it implies is that a lot of competition for that last playoff spot. clearly there's a ton of the season left to be played, and it's kind of absurd to be talking about this, but that is basically what the second half of the season will build toward, and we'll see whether or not that trend continues, that mold, that form, whatever, or, you know, maybe something else will emerge. But for right now, it's kind of the way it's going to shake out. But you bring up an interesting point, Kyle, and that is with the NCAA tournament this weekend, coaches, GMs potentially utilizing it as an opportunity to scout not only their incoming talent, the seniors that have already been drafted whose rights are available, not only the seniors who haven't been drafted who will be a part of the player pool after that, but also heading into next January's MLL entry draft, this year's junior class. There is a boatload of juniors that are good players, and there are a handful, or more than a handful, that are going to be playing this weekend. So you've been given a task. It's Quinn's idea. I communicated it to you earlier today. Why don't you explain how you understand it to be, and then I will punch holes in your misinterpretation of what the assignment is.
Okay, so my assignment, as I see it, is to find MLL GMs and/or coaches that will accept the formality, the fun of my company, perhaps for a couple minutes, maybe, you know, after a game or before, you know, hopefully after a game when they, to get their thoughts on the guys that are playing, guys like, you know, Sawyer from Loyola, Bernhardt, stuff like that, just to see what their thoughts are on their guys and kind of give my thoughts maybe after that on, you know, maybe some rankings of the players that are actually playing in the Final Four this weekend.
People love and then, rankings.
People do love rankings. They do enjoy them. Maybe not mine so much, but in general. So just kind of get their thoughts, see how they stack up, see if maybe they'll tell me the truth or if they'll snow me, and make a very large article out of it, as I am wont to do.
Yeah,
how was that?
It's going to be awesome. That was very good. Nice interpretation. Cool. And yeah, well, you mentioned rankings and how much people love them, so let's talk about them because it's what we did in the offseason and put in the June issue of Inside Lacrosse Magazine. Paul Rabel's on the cover. He is, according to us, the number one player in the MLL, or MLL, whatever. And then there are 49 guys behind him. We did this before the season started, by and large. And, you know, we did it with the input of a handful of different people. Kyle and I were the ones that commented on the rankings, and that's kind of the feature. So you should check it out and read it because it'll be interesting and fun, hopefully. But there's some other things outside of this that we can still talk about, Kyle. So first things first, what were your thoughts on how everything turned out? Because you've gotten your hands on the magazine. What do you think?
I mean, I like it. I don't really understand why we have to keep being abbreviated as KD and TF. I think it's pretty clear, just writing style. You just go style-wise, pick that out. Just saying. Apparently we share credit on one of these. That's nice.
Yeah, I think what happened was, so like, I sent you, you were supposed to comment on like 1 through 20, or no, I'm sorry, 1 through 10, whatever, you know, like that, and I was gonna do like, like 11 through 20, and then 20 through 40. And like, one of the points that you picked, like, there were guys, like, there was a guy that had been moved, cause I think you, I don't know, I think I didn't send you the final version or something like that, and there was a guy that had been moved, and so I was like,
right.
Oh no, you didn't write enough, like, what's left over isn't enough, so then I, like, fleshed it out and, like, added another paragraph or something like that. It was fun. It was kind of like holding hands, skipping through the meadow.
Yeah, good times. There's a lot of abbreviations, but other than that, I liked how it turned out. I was happy to have a little debate. I wish I could have talked to the other people. Are we naming the other people that voted on this? Do you want to do that?
I don't think voting is proper. I don't think that's what happened. I think they provided input.
Rank. Input. The up and down arrow.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I liked, you know,
no,
some of the stuff.
We can name those people.
Okay.
Do you want to name them?
No, you go ahead. I don't want to get in trouble.
Oh, okay. Well, John Gelati and Quinn Kesnick provided their input. So that's who else's opinion formed these rankings?
I thought it was just you and me and them.
It was.
Right?
Yeah, it was the four of
us. Ah, awesome. Well, I think, you know, you can see the mark of all of that, of all different manner of spicy genius all around this. I thought it was good. I thought we hit a lot of points. I think it got a little dicey towards 40 to 50, but, you know, there's still good players all around. And, you know, hopefully the players that are in it don't take offense as to where they are, or, and guys that aren't in it are like, well, I should have been in. It's just like, oh, all right, guy, relax. Like, you know, just play. You know, I think the negativity has reached an impasse. I think we just need to be positive going forward. It was fun to write. I enjoyed it. Happy to be allowed to have assignments like that and give rankings and give opinion. And, you know, that's what I like to do. So, yeah, it was a good time. I hope everyone enjoys it when they read it. And check it out soon on newsstands near you.
Okay, well, welcome back to all of you who stopped paying attention to what Kyle was talking about a minute ago because you just wanted to hear people talk about rankings. Kyle... The most important question is, since we did this before the season started, who has played so well since the season started that if we were to redo this now, somebody outside of the top 50 that would assuredly be a part of this right now, and this is not an opinion-based question, there is a right and there are many wrong answers.
Jeremy Sieverts?
Okay, well, apparently there are multiple right answers. He was not who I was thinking of, but that's a really good point.
Who are you thinking of?
I was thinking of Chaz.
Oh, the Chaz. We love Chaz.
I was thinking of Chaz primarily because I think the reason he was excluded... I mean, Chaz is probably... I mean, as an all-star, he was implicitly included in, you know, the top 50 players a handful of times over the recent past. And my issue with Sieverts is not that I think that he isn't a top 50 talent. It's more there isn't a track record of proven production that you would like to see out of a guy in that type of spot. With Chaz, there is, and the reason that he wasn't was similar to the reason that a handful of these people kind of dipped on the list a little bit, and that is they were returning from having not played. And, you know, he was returning from a more prolonged absence, but he's been phenomenal, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think the real question was he'd been absent from the league. We weren't really sure until he had the uniform and the helmet on and the stick if he was going to play. And then he played and made SportsCenter multiple times and, you know, with great fanfare, and he's great to watch. He's fun to watch, you know, and he is a difference maker for the machine. It's going to be interesting to see what happens when, you know, Steele comes into that team. I think with the Sieverts thing, your point's well taken, and one of the biggest, weirdest places I've taken heat from, about the preseason stuff I wrote is saying that I didn't get why Denver was killing other middies and trading other middies and keeping guys like Sieverts and stuff, because I basically just thought of him as a D-mid. And I was wrong, and he tore it up, you know, except for this past weekend against Boston. Guy tore it up. Good for him, you know. But he's definitely shown ability and should be on the top 50 from that. And so is Chaz. Chaz always had it. He never lost it. It's a matter of him getting in the uniform. And once he did, it's pretty apparent that he should be on the list for sure.
Awesome. So who in the top 20, most notably, do you think would have fallen outside of the top 20 based on his performance? We're not including guys like Joe Walters, who has yet to play in an MLL game.
Oh, that was my answer. Maybe Eric Martin, just because he hasn't really recovered from the injury and got injured again. But that's not really his fault. That's not a talent barometer type thing. I think maybe... I don't know. I think the top 20 is pretty solid. I think it's pretty solid. I mean, Pizer hasn't been playing well. Buchanan's been great in the games he's played, but he's been limited in games he's played. Alex Smith hasn't played, so maybe Alex Smith gets moved down. We don't know if he's even going to play again. You know what I mean? Like, people keep talking about it, but Adam Rand's doing okay for Chesapeake. He's not lighting the world on fire, but he's doing all right. You know, it's, you know, I don't know if he needs to be on the top 20. He probably should have been 30, but I think that's where I ranked him. I mean, I think Dixon is a little low here. You know, he's at 30. You know, we have some guys that could shuffle in and out of that.
Well, you're getting ahead of yourself, because that was what I was going to ask next, is who's moving up?
Yeah.
Dixon is probably the best answer, I think.
Yeah, I think Dixon's moving up, for sure.
Although, Junior, Junior, like, you know, he's 21. It's, what have you seen? Do you think that he could put...
I mean, it's one game.
In one game?
It's one game.
All right, so you're not freaking out yet?
No, not yet. I loved it. I loved watching it. I liked watching him do his thing, and his BTB goal was smooth as usual. But you know, let's not freak out yet.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how much did it remind you of the Junior of old?
7. 7. I'll go with 7, solid 7. He was up there. Yeah, he made some moves. He still was a little slow turning that corner, but he still did it. You know? Last year he couldn't even do it. Yeah. So, definitely a plus.
Alright, we'll move on down the list. Anybody else that you feel like has made significant strides or shortfalls?
You know, I'm just looking through it right now. I don't see anything crazy here. I really don't. No, not really, actually. This list is pretty good. I mean, we were going to pick it apart, but once you get deep, it's really not that terrible. I don't think that it's bad at all. I mean, aside from those couple, you know, almost surprises, Casey's in the top 20, and he had a rough game against the Bayhawks, but they beat him up the whole game. And it was his first game back for almost a year, right? He didn't play indoor, so almost a year for him. Everyone else looks to be in order. Like, you know, Joe Wald hasn't played yet, but we went over that, and everything else looks good. I think everyone else is adequately ranked, if not appropriately ranked.
Ultimately, we didn't rank where they were going to be 3 to 4 weeks into the season. We ranked where we
True.
Thought they were going to be.
It's a preseason rank.
In mid-season form. Well, no, that's my point, is that in the preseason, I don't think anybody was imagining. I'm trying to determine my mindset. It was probably a little bit of where did they end last season, but then ultimately, like, you know, John Grant was probably even lower than 21 at the end of last season. I think that I was definitely taking into account what he had done in the NLL and what I expected him to do once he hit his stride in MLL, and so I was kind of projecting forward to maybe the midpoint, endpoint of this season. So maybe we should table this, put it on hold, probably end this podcast because I've got other things to do. And we will come back next week. Does that sound good?
Yeah, it'll be great. Can't wait for this weekend at Gillette. I hope everyone comes and has a great time. Great atmosphere for tailgating. It's kind of like, I guess, my native stadium, even though I'm not really from anywhere near there. But it's a good time. Everyone should come out if you can. And I think you can still buy tickets. So come on down. It'll be a good show. Sometimes it doesn't matter who's playing. It's just good games every time. So come on down.
That's true. It will be fun. And yes, there are tickets still available.
Excellent. Excellent.
All right. Kyle Davitt, it's been the Inside Lacrosse MLL Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.